Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Pazi Sahlberg, an internationally renowned educator and the author of several groundbreaking books. His 2013 book, Finnish Lessons, What the World Can Learn from Educational Change in Finland, won the Graumeier Award for an idea that has the potential to change the world. His subsequent books include 2019's Let the Children Play and his latest book, In Teachers We Trust, The Finnish Way to World-Class Schools, written with Timothy Walker. He's served as a senior education specialist at the World Bank, a visiting professor at Harvard, and director general of Finland's Ministry of Education and Culture. He is now a professor of educational leadership at the University of Melbourne in Australia, which is where we're catching up with him. And it's very early morning over there. You'll hear his pet birds waking up. Pazi, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and honor to talk with you.
Oh, it's our honor, Pazi. Thank you. And we're going to talk about Australia and other things, but we want to start in your native country of Finland. Because today, Finland is known for having some of the best, most egalitarian schools in the world. The Finnish model has been studied the world over, and your books have helped leaders across the globe understand what's happening. But it wasn't always this way. So we'd like you to take us back a few decades, if you would, to Finnish education before the country decided to make a change. What were schools like, and what were some of the problems that they were facing?
Yeah, I don't know how much in the history do you want me to go back to, but normally we go somewhere in the time when the Finnish society and economy really started to kick off compared to the other Nordic countries of Europe. We're talking about the 1970s when the system was really divided into kind of a two streams where about half of the kids went to what we call the grammar schools and ended up in a university, and the others went the what we call civic education, vocational education, that ended in a careers and jobs. So this was a kind of a change in a way that we created a comprehensive school of 9 years in the 1970s where all the kids went to the same similar school and had equal opportunities to do whatever they want to do after they are 16. So that was a kind of a big change, and there are many countries in the world still kind of considering whether this is a solution, the way to go. But in all the Nordic countries, including Norway and Sweden, this was the model of schooling that was decided, and that has been the kind of a bedrock and foundation for many of those things that you mentioned in the introduction about not just the equal opportunity, but equity in education, that the students' home background really didn't determine that much what they end up doing in their lives. And, you know, the kind of hallmarks of Finnish education these days that are mentioned in the literature about the teacher education, what are needed to run that type of system, the relatively small and thin administration to do that locally, run schools, and, you know, all these other things are built on this foundational idea. So there are many details, of course, in the story along the way until today, but this Nordic idea that education is fundamentally a public service and that is the probably the best way to run the system of schools that will be equitable and provide everybody an opportunity to be successful.
There was an article in The Atlantic that explained that, you know, during this time of transition, the goal of the changes that Finland instituted that resulted in so much success today, the goal was never excellence, it was equity. And you mentioned this idea of equal opportunities, and I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that just a little bit. What were some of the key changes that Finland decided to prioritize? How specifically did the new public school system promote equity?
You know, the fact that schools need to have good, well-prepared teachers to understand, not only to teach well mathematics and reading and science and all these things that we these days focusing on, but that they are able to understand each and every student as an individual learner. And that has been sometimes a kind of a misunderstood part of the Finnish or Nordic education, is that when we talk about equality of opportunity and comprehensive schools, some people think that the aim has been to educate everybody, all the children, to be similar to one another. But that has never been the case. I think the secret behind this equitable education in Finland and Nordic countries has been exactly the opposite. The aim has been to try to educate through our schools all children to be themselves and different. And that requires teachers who are able to not just teach well, but also understand how to work with the complex and increasingly diverse groups of individuals. Then, of course, it requires the other social policies that is another often misunderstood or ignored part of the Finnish education, is that it's not just the school that is important in order to fulfill this dream of equitable and fair education. It's also the all the other social policies, health and youth policies, and, you know, even things like sport and culture that are part of the education and educating young people. If I compare the situation today here in Australia, it's a very different conversation. Where here still, it's a pretty much kind of a siloed policies and sectors that are trying to figure out what to do and how to design or redesign or reimagine societies rather than starting from the needs of the learners and children and families.
Yeah, those differences are fascinating. And the story of Finnish schools, of Finnish education, has caused, you know, for a while, it was really a sensation among people who study education and learning. Your book, Finnish Lessons, sold out its first printing in a week. And if, by the way, you have any advice on how we might be able to make our book do that, it would be wonderful if you're willing to share. For a while, you were facilitating 100 visits a year by foreign delegations, and yet you've always cautioned against countries trying to simply import the Finnish model wholesale. You said it wouldn't work. Why is that?
The context is so important. It's the same the other way around. And in my book, I actually argue that most of the education innovation, you know, the great ideas that you can find in Finnish schools and many schools here in Australia, were actually designed and developed in the United States. And the contexts are very different for, you know, for the reasons that I mentioned earlier about how to design or redesign the society to serve the children, that they don't really travel that well. And we do know that education reforms and ideas are fairly poor travelers from one place to another. It's a little bit like a wine, that you can have a nice bottle of wine in Italy and you buy the case and bring it home and it doesn't taste the same anymore, because it's the place that creates a kind of a feeling and impression about how things go. And it's the same with education. And I remember when the second edition of my book, Finnish Lessons, was necessary, when the publisher asked me to do that, I asked if they can have this yellow sticker on the cover of the book saying that don't try these ideas at home. because you know, so many people before that, they told me about, they have tried to fix their own education systems by importing Finnish ideas. And in almost always, when I took a closer look at that, I thought that, you know, this is not really what is happening in Finland. And this is certainly something that is not going to work in your systems. In an introduction, you say that one of the things that people often take away in the Finnish system was that the kids seem to do very little, if any, homework, and that the schooling starts a little bit later than in some other countries. And it's a wrong way to try to fix or redesign your own school system by, you know, taking things like this, that, okay, let's remove all the homework from kids, or let's keep them home for a little bit longer, because you always need to kind of see that how the Finnish kids are doing this. You know, one thing, for example, is that Finland has more libraries, public libraries, than any other country in the world when it comes to kind of a per capita use of books. So parents read a lot, or used to read much more. So they were kind of naturally doing many of these kind of homework type of things without schools assigning homework. And also the fact that Finnish kids are starting school at the age of 7 still, you need to see that, you know, what are they doing before? That we have a universal early childhood education paid by, or heavily subsidized by, the government and local governments. And there's a free preschool. So there is a much more that meets the eye in a kind of a very quick visit to Finland, or reading a couple of books and then saying that we're going to implement the Finnish reform that people often realize. So that's why it's very important always to be mindful with the fact that the culture is so strong that it's often explaining why people do certain things in the United States or here in Australia or Finland, and why they don't do or why they can't do these things. And if you don't pay attention to the clear, kind of carefully to the context, you often make big mistakes.
This is Ryan Radzeski here with Greg Baer. We're talking with Pasi Sahlberg, the acclaimed author, professor, and educator.
Pasi, I have a messy wondering that I'm going to hope you make sense of. There you are in Australia. You can now look to Finland, your native Finland, and probably notice things or appreciate them in a different light than when you were immersed in it, right? What do you now celebrate in a way that you didn't notice fully, and where is it falling short? You know, then having taught at Harvard, what is it that you noticed in that American context that you would celebrate, and similarly in that Australian context in which you find yourself? You have such a global sensibility. Help us make sense of these things that are working, that inspire you, that deserve to be uplifted, and maybe some things that aren't quite as shiny and bright as we think they might be.
I have two kids here. They're going to school here in Australia. And schooling in general, I guess for most Australians, I would say, is a fairly complicated thing if you have kids, not just in terms of money and, you know, how to get it done, but, you know, all these considerations of where's a good school and how do I participate in that kind of a make sure that my school is doing right things. And yet not school meals in the schools, or very few schools here offering healthy school meals. And I guess it's probably for many people in the US the same thing, is that there's so many things that you need to be kind of engaged in, including, you know, bringing money or paying all kinds of things all the time here. That is, you know, even if my kids go to public government school here, but it's expensive. Like, I need to pay for all kinds of things. It's thousands of dollars per kid every year. So this is one of those things that I really appreciate and have learned to value even more than before compared to Finland. The most Finnish parents, they don't need to worry about finding a good school. And, you know, as soon as you have a school in your neighborhood, you can be pretty relaxed that the school is taking care of, you know, all of those things, including healthy school meals. And I always thought that arts and music and drama and dance, you know, those important areas of growing up would be automatically available for every child. But it's not the case here, and it's a kind of a weak area of education in many other countries. Finland is a good example of that balanced education for each and every child. But then, of course, you know, the kind of a painful part of the you ask me about, it's been a kind of a difficult to watch the policymaking and politics have allowed the school system to erode a little bit or slip away from the kind of a shiny position where they were before, simply by too long living in this world of having a best education school system in the world and just hoping that the future will be the same as it was until now. And we all know that it doesn't work like this, that the change for the kind of a next wave of schooling or the building for the future of education should begin when everything is going strong and when the system or organization is still climbing kind of uphill. Finland has kind of failed to do that. I've been asking for the last 15 years really in Finland to take that courage and be bold and see something that Finns did in the 1970s, but that hasn't happened yet.
Pasi, your latest book is In Teachers We Trust, The Finnish Way to World-Class Schools. And I'm particularly interested in this book, not only as a former teacher, but as someone who, here in America, if we were to ask teachers how much trust we place in them, we don't think the answers would be particularly encouraging. In fact, research shows that the lack of autonomy and trust is often the major reason for the teacher shortage we're experiencing here in the United States. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what does it actually take to place trust in teachers? What does it look like? What are the policies? What does a day-to-day life for a teacher who's trusted actually look like?
Yeah, you know, this is exactly the question why Tim Walker and myself decided to write the book a few years ago. And Tim is the American primary school teacher married to Finn, and he was working as a primary school teacher for many years in Helsinki. So we met 7-8 years ago. I would probably start answering this question by saying that what it is not. People often think that you can just kind of make an announcement or declaration that now we begin to trust teachers. But, you know, being a teacher, that we know that that's, you know, lip service is not really good. Before this actually can happen is that some real things must happen. And this is exactly the Finnish story that we describe in the book, that how Finland ended in a situation where most, probably all of the Finnish teachers feel that they are truly trusted professionals in their schools, what they do. And there's a big change because when I was a teacher a long time ago, I definitely didn't feel like this. And most of my colleagues didn't feel that we are trusted. And mostly because there were so many things that came through directives and regulations, administration that we had to do. And we all knew that these things doesn't make much sense. It has nothing to do with what we try to do with the kids. Or in some cases, these regulations were actually making things worse. So this is what Finland did during the course of the 1990s. And one of the big takeaways in the book is that, if you read it carefully, is that we actually say in the book that trust arrives on foot, but it departs on horseback, which means that it takes a long time to build this culture of trust. And people need to understand that trust is a part of the culture. It's not a project that we do. It's something that has to be embedded and built into the education culture and school culture if we want to use that as a kind of a power to serve to do things better. And then we need to do concrete things like gradually loosen the grip that the administration often has on what teachers are doing by, redesigning, reimagining curriculum in a way, not just in terms of the content, but what's the role of the curriculum in a school. And in Finnish case, for example, all the schools are responsible their own curriculum. They design their own curriculum. The assessment is the other thing. And here the United States is a good example, Australia as well, where so much student assessment is done from outside that many teachers feel that they don't have any role in assessing their kids. So somebody else will do that on their behalf. And they kind of, many teacher education programs, for example, here and in the US don't really include any student assessment parts. And this is a big part of the Finnish system, is that we have continued to rely on teachers' judgment, not individual teachers' judgment, but kind of a collective wisdom that schools have in understanding what the kids, how kids make progress and what they learn in the evaluation and assessment. But again, it's very important to also keep in mind that trust can actually depart on horseback if it's not taken seriously and cared.
Pasi, you are a professor of educational leadership. So what's grabbing your attention today? What's that preferred future to which we should be striving, whether we're there in Australia, across the Atlantic in Finland, or right here in the United States? What is that preferred future? What are the bold questions that, at the very least, we should be wrestling with every day?
Of course, nobody knows what the future will look like. And everybody's future can be correct, depending on what your kind of a premises and assumptions are. But for me, it's a very simple thing. And, I mentioned Sir Ken Robinson, and, his work and writings and leadership in this area remain very important to me. He was a good friend. If he was here part of this conversation, he would probably even more strongly to talk about the role of the children and the young people themselves. For me, I think my starting point for this future building and thinking is the value that I have, which says that young people have much more capabilities and capacity to do good things for themselves and others that we give them credit for. This is easy to say, and people often say that, of course they do. But, if you take this seriously, then of course it goes down to really understanding it and thinking again what a learning could look like or what the school could be in the future if this was a starting point. And we often hear about student voice, which is important. I think we need to listen to kids, even very young kids, about, what they expect and what they think they need in, growing up healthy and happy and responsible citizens. We often talk about agency, that students should be part of the co-designing and co-creating the school. But I would take, in my future, I would gradually also include kind of a student-led schools, that it's not just a voice and agency, but that the students should be gradually learn how to lead their own learning. And the name, the kind of a title of school, what is school in the future, is something that in my thinking will probably lose the meaning that it has had until now, as learning can take place anywhere now with the technology and the communities often offer different opportunities to learn that. But my future, I would start to build that around this notion and idea of engaging young people more into, not just through voice and agency, but leading their own learning and reimagining the school with us. I don't think that the adult reimagined educational learning alone will never be what needs to be. We need to find a different way to engage young people.
So, Pazi, we're going to go into our final couple questions here. This is what we call the Remaking Tomorrow lightning round. So I'm just going to ask you some rapid-fire questions. You just tell me the first, you know, word or two that pop into your head. You ready?
I was born ready.
All right. Favorite thing about living in Australia?
The beaches.
Advice as a Finn for those of us dealing with the cold, dark days of winter?
Dress up well.
Or move to Australia. Book that most profoundly changed your thinking?
The Element.
Book that you most want to write but haven't gotten to yet?
The book will be called More Than Your Evidence. It's about the student leadership after student voice and agency.
Oh, wonderful. How does Pazi Sahlberg kick back and play himself?
Through rock and roll.
How can people find out more about the work you're doing?
Through my website is probably the best. A gift from my American friends, neighbors, when I left the U.S. 15 years ago. So they gave me this website that I promise to update regularly and tell them and others what I do. Yeah, the website is easily pazisahlberg.com. It's not commercial, no commercials there. It's just all of my work, my writings, and whereabouts.
Pazi, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Two things that are connected. One is to more actively engage in the way their children use and spend time with the digital technologies. It's more about helping kids more to understand what the technology today is, what the artificial intelligence can do and cannot do, and reduce the time that we spend on entertainment and social media and technology, and increase the time that we spend together, you know, going outdoors and playing. It's a very, very important part. The good thing is that these two things are connected, and by doing those, you address two very, very important parts of growing up and education for children.
Thanks so much to Pazi Sahlberg, professor of educational leadership at the University of Melbourne and the author, most recently, of In Teachers We Trust, The Finnish Way to World-Class Schools. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.